Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We've been hearing plenty about AI-generated content in the past few days, and in Poland, TikTok accounts have been targeting young audiences with AI-generated women advocating far-right views and also advocating for Poland's departure from the European Union. Polish relations with the European Union had been frayed up till 2023 when the right-wing Law and Justice Party were in power, but Donald Tusk's government has not yet managed to fully undo the damage done to relations by that government. So are these AI-generated accounts driving any increase in anti-EU sentiment in Poland, and is it rising there in general? Well, John O'Brien is Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University, and he joins me now to talk about this. John, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, before we talk about this, which was the topic we wanted to discuss with you, we have to ask you about Mercosur. What's your reaction to the government deciding that they won't support Mercosur, but yet they will have to go along with it because they don't have enough for a blocking minority?
Well, I don't think it's a surprise, but I think it's a mistake. And it seems to me that it's reflective of a long-term culture where the farming lobby has had a real grip on governments in Ireland. The simple fact is that agriculture is much less important than it used to be to our economy. And in a world where trade is increasingly uncertain and disordered, think about what we've endured over the last year or so. If you've got a market of 280 million people and you're able to sell into that market barrier free, I think we should be all in favour of it.
Now, the question of maybe it's a tiny percentage terms in the overall economy, but life is not just about the economy. You know, life is about rural communities, about all of those things that make living in Ireland a good thing. If you make it non-viable for Irish farmers to continue, what then?
Well, I think there are different issues going on there, and there are issues that are completely separate from Mercosur. I think we really need to understand that the percentage of beef, for example, that's potentially going to come in, that's new into the market, is infinitesimally low relative to where we are currently.
So I really don't see... Though, the farmers will say it's a thin end of the wedge, and why are we encouraging the Brazilians to cull the rainforest to have cattle grazing?
You and I have been listening to farmers saying it's the thin end of the wedge for the last 40 years. It doesn't really matter what the issue is. Everything is existential. I think we have to understand that Ireland is one of the most globalized countries in the world, and this is a trade deal that the country stands to benefit from significantly in the years to come.
So what will we sell them, do you think?
Here we could go back to Brexit, Pat. There was a lot of pressure on the food and drink industry in particular, and the challenge they faced was that there was a new barrier potentially in one of their main markets. Mm. And actually, many of the people that I met at the time said they'd become very complacent. And you know what they did? They went out and found new markets with the help of the Irish trade agencies. Given that Ireland is such an important high-tech producer, I think there's every possibility that we can export barrier-free into Brazil and into other countries in South America in the years to come. But, I mean, I just really don't understand why agriculture has this sort of outsized importance in EU policy terms and in terms of the overall economy. I think we're living in a much, much more sophisticated world than we used to. And government, I think, has to understand that.
So you understand the political decision made by the government, even though they know as they make it, it won't have any effect.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely for domestic purposes that that decision has been made, because clearly they're watching the voting patterns in the European Union. And it looks like, for example, Meloni has been persuaded to support the deal, where at an earlier point in time, Italy wasn't going to support it.
Now, there are other agricultural countries in Europe. I mean, Poland would have vast areas of cereal growing, I presume. Italy, obviously a wine-growing region, tomatoes, olives, all of those kind of things. You'd imagine that those countries would be wondering, Are we going to be flooded with South American wine and South American vegetables?
Well, every time the European Union negotiates a new trade deal, you get all of these interests in play. Just like when the EU budget, for example, is being renegotiated. And you get all of these kind of fears expressed. I think if you step back from the experience of expanding trade that the European Union has had over the last 40 years, almost every trade deal has brought significantly more benefits. Now, as ever in globalization, there are winners and there are losers, for sure. But the overall benefits that the opening up of trade has presented, I think, has been incalculable for Europe. And especially now where there's such uncertainty, I think if we have the possibility of opening up new markets in countries that are increasingly successful and rich, where there are rich consumers to buy our products, we should be absolutely in favor of it.
Now, let's talk about Poland and these bots. That these artificially generated young women, and they are by and large young women, they're attractive young women as well, but they're not real.
So this ad appeared on TikTok right at the end of 2025, and it was deliberately aimed at young people. It was advocating, amongst other things, for Poland to leave the European Union. Strong suspicion that this was Russian-sourced. It was Russian disinformation.
Because that's what they want, the disintegration of the Union.
Exactly. And they want people at loggerheads with each other within individual member states. I think you mentioned the politics of this at the outset. It is true that the far-right party Law and Justice lost power in 2023. But if you look at opinion polls, and this is connected to the AI ad, the combined support of Law and Justice, which is now the main opposition party, but with two extreme right parties further to their right, is about 52%. So Donald Tusk's government, although he's leading in the polls, I think is very, very uneasy about what's to come. And we know that there has been more and more interference in elections by malign external actors. If you took the Romanian presidential election, for example, in 2024, it was clearly a Russian operation that again targeted TikTok in support of a candidate who was almost unknown at the beginning of the race. And he suddenly won that contest. It had to be cancelled, annulled by the Romanian Constitutional Court, and a new contest was held. But that's the level of problem that AI presents.
Now, and the idea of targeting presents. Young people is that young people have no memory. Because it has baffled me looking at Hungary, and I'm old enough to remember as a child what happened in 1956 when the Hungarians believing that that the Americans based in Germany and so on would come to their aid and did not. I mean, the voice of America was encouraging their opposition to the Soviet rule, but they didn't help them in the event. And so the tanks rolled into Budapest and people were killed. It was a famous uprising. The Poles have suffered at the hands of the Soviets as well. So what is it that they've such short memories, even in what's taught in schools, about how evil Russia has been in its behavior towards them?
Well, the pro-Russian factions on the far right in Poland, and this is a complex landscape. The far right parties are not all the same. We should really understand that. They are a minority, for sure, even within the far right. The candidate, for example, that stood for one of these parties in the presidential election in Poland last year, he is currently before the courts for extreme anti-Semitism, for an attack he made on the Hanukkah celebrations at the end of 2023. But it is a complex picture. His party is very different from Law and Justice, which has an extreme anti-Russian sensibility about it. But I think where you're coming in is the vacuum that's created that allows misinformation and disinformation to flourish. The World Economic Forum says that disinformation is the greatest threat in Europe to political cohesion and societal trust. I think they're right. And in a way, this is precedes AI very significantly. We can trace this back, I think, to the appearance of the smartphone in about 2007. And what we've seen then, Pat, is this extraordinary collapse in literacy. It's going on all over the world. In a way, we're returning to what some people call pre-literate or pre-enlightenment societies where people are just not reading. And if you're not reading, you're not thinking by definition. And that's the kind of space, I think, that these actors
and
try
even
to
people
exploit.
Who say, I keep up with the news, they do it maybe in bite-sized pieces, which they get on their smartphone from not even a news outlet, but from TikTok or
some anonymous internet source. Yeah. That's right. People are reading in fragments. We know also that in published literature, the number of words per sentence has actually fallen significantly because I presume they feel that people just aren't able to handle the complexity. I mean, I see it in the university system all the time. We really, really struggle to get students to read. And where they do read, their capacity to do focused or sustained reading has really collapsed. And this is because their attention has been stolen away from them.
No, but there are other people who might be guilty of maybe helping to cause this. You get these academic reports or indeed government reports. And I put in a long government report into ChatGPT and I got probably instead of 400 pages, I got a 40-page summary, which did the job pretty well.
Yeah.
So people do gild the lily. You know, I must have a 200-page report to make it look good. It's repetitive, it's and so on and so forth. And ChatGPT takes the essence out of it. So when kids are asked in college to read these incredibly boring texts, can you blame them?
Well, at one level, no. But at another level, if they step back from what they're doing, they have to understand that what is missing is their capacity for critical reasoning. That's what reading teaches you more than anything else. Joan Didion, the great American writer, she said, I write so that I can understand what I'm thinking about any particular topic. And I think this is absolutely true. We are losing that capacity to do the normal kind of inferencing that we do when we read something. And all those steps that we take in getting to understand whatever the problem may be. And this is before, I stress, we even really begin to take the AI issue really seriously. This is a problem that predates it by some time.
Now, one of the things that will happen, I've no doubt, is that the younger generation who are playing around with these AI tools and they know they can create fictions very easily, whether they're nefarious fictions like sexual representations of their own friends, which are totally artificially created. But you'd imagine that knowing that this can be done, that their skepticism about anything they see on their phones should rise.
Absolutely. If you look at the broad landscape of social media, irrespective of which platform you're talking about, they're populated with so much fake material. Just to give you one example, just before Christmas, the great Irish fashion designer Paul Costello died the latter part of last year. So I don't do it very often. I went into Facebook at some point in December, and there was an article from what purported to be the Irish Independent. It had the green and white logo and everything else. It had the name of Charlie Weston, deeply respected business journalist with the Independent. And it was ostensibly about Paul Costello's will, suggesting there was a fight within his family. But what it was really doing was encouraging you to click further so that you would get to this investment opportunity. But the really scary thing was how authentic it all appeared to be. And even to
and
the
how,
point...
How upsetting to the family.
Oh, to the family, absolutely. And to Charlie Weston and others. But if you looked at the comment section, these comments were ostensibly all from Irish people saying things like, I invested 250 euros this morning and I've got already 750 euros using the same formula that Paul Costello was alleged to have used. Uh-huh. It's absolutely frightening because if you translate that into an electoral context, we've already seen deep fakes in the Irish presidential election, for example. It may not have been very good, but these things are getting better and better all the time. So we're reaching a point where all of this has the capacity to actually change the results of elections.
So what's to be done?
Regulation, I think, Pat, is absolutely the key. And I'm sure everybody knows that the big tech platforms in the United States are fighting this rearguard action as they see it in Europe in particular.
There's something that really is bothering me. I mean, I watched Kristi Noem last night lying about what happened in Minneapolis, and Donald Trump followed up with the Truth Social lie about what happened. I mean, it is so hard to get at the truth. And do these people not realize that they are truly evil? They are truly, truly evil people.
I agree. Just on that question, we found out this morning that the ICE agent responsible for killing that woman yesterday in Minneapolis, there were people on the internet using AI to produce what they believe to be this person's face. So this AI-generated face has been circulating in the US overnight. And you can imagine how dangerous that is, because you may have a completely different representation of the person who...
Given it was news coverage, we saw it, and we'll be talking about it later on in the program, we saw what happened live. And then we have a statement saying that this ICE agent was injured and was recovering in hospital. We saw him holster his gun and walk
away,
uninjured.
And the car was moving in the other direction rather than towards him. But I just want to come back to... the question that you raised last, which is really about the relationship between government and big tech. The best book published last year, in my view, was by an author called Giuliano D'Empoli, a French-Italian writer. It was called The Hour of the Predators. And what he pointed to was the relationship between authoritarian regimes like Trump's and big tech. Think about that image at the inauguration with all of the big tech leaders lined up behind Trump. To me, it exemplified what 2025 was about and about the danger we face, because these are really predatory forces. They're completely amoral. I remember early on during the Brexit referendum, you may remember Carol Cadwalader, the great Guardian journalist. She does this TED talk in which she describes how Facebook was used to micro-target Brexit voters with misinformation and disinformation. She described Facebook as a crime scene at the time. The situation is vastly worse now, and that's where the regulators come in, and that's why I think the big tech people have been putting so much pressure through Trump on Brussels, because Brussels is the key to regulation globally. They hate the regulation because it constrains them. And even where, for example, the Polish government has now put in an official complaint to Brussels about TikTok, and TikTok being in contravention of the Digital Services Act, you're seeing pressure coming from J.D. Vance and from Rubio and others in the United States for the EU to actually water down that world-leading regulation that we have.
I have a feeling, though, that on this rock, those same people will perish, because these things come back to bite them.
I would hope so, but the direction of travel is all in their favour. That's the issue. Mm. And my view in the summer was that one of the reasons the EU made a terrible mistake in giving in to Trump in Scotland on the trade issue was that, as a classic playground bully, he was going to come back for more. So the pressure on Europe's tech regulation actually increased dramatically. And you may have seen where the Commission opened up four cases against Elon Musk's ex. One of them was decided before Christmas. There was a 120 million euro fine. J.D. Vance immediately is on X criticizing the EU as being this Orwellian authoritarian state that was denying people free speech. That's the kind of pressure that is accumulating. And at the moment, we are really dependent on the Commission and other actors making the Digital Services Act work to protect citizens.
John O'Brennan, Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.